All right. Thank you all so much for joining this presentation. I entered the presentation into the pre-talk system like months ago, and then I didn't find anything on the program. So like 3 days ago, I was like, what's going on? This is the final program. And I'm not on it. So I looked, and it didn't hit the submit button. So so absolute panic. I called Chantal, like, Chantal, I'm massively panicking. It's like, I will consult with myself if this is okay. And and after a long procedure, it was moved to this slot, which is awesome. It's really nice. Thank you very much, Chantal and Dimitri. This is a story about physical media piracy. The slides are a mixture of Dutch and English. I'll do the presentation in English. And why is this important? Well, and why is this relevant? Back in the days when we were all young and even more beautiful, 25% of all media carriers like tapes, DVDs, DVDs and CDs was illegal. So it was illegally produced and mass produced. So that's an astonishing big number. So what does that look like? So if you collect one of each for a few years, just before the pandemic hit, I was collecting like for a few years, you get a collection like this, which is tapes, CDs, music, boxes with DVDs. I'll show you some in a moment. The quote from 1 in 4 is coming from an official source. It's Brein Info. It's the agency that tries to protect the creative. And they tell about how much damage the piracy has done to artists. And they do so in a very nice and transparent way. And they have like this magazine, and every I think quarter or something they told like we've done this bust and such. So it was, they were very transparent in what they did. And one of the issues of this magazine, number two, tells about the criminal CD day. It's a terrible pun on D-Day, but they that should be illegal as well. But on the September 8, 1999, the biggest manufacturer of pirate products was busted, and that had also some kind of impact. And from there, I'll show you how they became this big of an organization, how piracy could thrive in the Netherlands, and a little bit of what it meant that such an organization was arrested. So let's first go back to basics. So what is a pirated product? I've got a stack here. You've probably seen the table in the lobby downstairs with a nice poster from the Twilight series. Here's an example. This is the Brown MTV Eurochart 99, which is a physical disc. I've got another one from 96. It's a physical disc in a box, and it contains about 20 songs, music songs. So this is 21 songs with all the popular artists from that time. So what is illegal about this? Basically, the next sections, the red parts, it is the logo, like Brown MTV, is brand fraud. Of course, MTV didn't have to do anything with this product, but somebody else just took their logo. And Brown is relevant for, they had the sponsorship deal with the real MTV for the European Top 20 show. I'll show you in a minute. And they have like unlicensed artwork previews. They have a list of songs which have all not been licensed for use. And fake copyright claims, fake brands, everything looks legit, but it's absolutely fiction. The slogans like original artists, original songs, well, that's in fact true because it was digital, and CDs were digital, so the reproductions from the original stuff were one-on-one. So maybe a little bit of mastering to make it sound punchier or something like that, but it's one-on-one, and the slogans are fine. And I made a mistake. I thought the TV CD claim was a lie, but they've been arrested so many times that it's been in the news, so. So it was a ripoff of the Brown MTV European Top 20, which was a show between 92 and 95 or something like that. And yeah, it was. I've watched it as a kid. So if you produce CDs like these, there's something special about this. This happened in a machine, like with a frequency. Every month, this is the one of August 93, you just saw January 99, but they did this for years. So here you see a collection of May 93 to somewhere in the 2000s. And every month there's a new issue with the newest music, the latest music, which is pretty awesome. It's like what we now have with YouTube and Spotify and such, that was the dream back then, and this was the product that came closest to it. There are some weird things going on. Some months have some other CDs and misprints and such. I'll come back to that in a moment. There's another big brand back then, which was Hit Explosion. It was a spin-off of MTV. Somebody wanted to do an even better product, and so they did. And after some, how do you say, negotiations, the people that produced the MTV also produced the Hit Explosion, and they've done so for years. You see them here. You see the list just goes to 2003 or something, 2002. Another brand that is familiar, that was a household name in the Netherlands, was Twilight. a lot of fans here. There was the poster is actually from this edition. Number 18. I think it's also a sort of semi-monthly release. So piracy had brands that were household names, which is already interesting. So what brands or let's look a little bit on what existed. So tapes, there are infinite numbers of tapes. Everybody with the home stereo set could produce or buy one tape and produce copies. So the music industry thought with the move to CDs, it's much more complicated to produce a CD. You need expensive equipment and such. So piracy will be gone. Here's CDs. These are all different brands of music CDs pirated from between 1993 and 2006. So these are different names, different labels. And you see like Radio 538 and Veronica, and there's Mega Charts, Mega Top 50, Music Factory, Warner Brothers, like every kind of brand that was basically popular was just, oh, nice brand. Would be a shame if something happened to it. So. And you see, there's this website called Discogs, which contains all CDs and vinyls ever made. That's their mission. And you can see, like, these are the different editions of pirated music discs over the years. So you see this peak between 97 and 2000s. That was, the biggest amount of, about 200 different pirate releases in the Netherlands that year. And of course, that number declined over time because with the advent of Napster, LimeWire, the iPod, the Pirate Bay and such, basically MP3s became popular and CDs were, they became a niche. So pirates has moved on to DVDs. Here you've got a few of these movie box things, which is basically a sleeve containing I've got one here from January 2018. So that's the newest thing I have. It's basically a box with poorly printed burned discs, so low quality. You can make them from your home. It's cheap. These are some of these boxes were produced in Eastern Europe, I guess. I think this would be easier to do in the Netherlands at home. But who has a DVD player? So apparently people had them in January 2018. I think nobody, this represents nobody of this crowd. Oh, one, per two, three. Oh, okay, okay. I'm sorry, I'll take it back.
It's an OG Xbox.
OG Xbox, okay, yeah. Of course, there was also a lot of software piracy. Here are some brands, but I'm missing a lot of that stuff in the collection. So you had Bits and Bytes, WinFiles, Twilight, of course. And Crazy Bytes has been massively big. So Twilight and Crazy Bytes were the bigger brands there. So with issues up to 65,000 every month. Those are serious numbers. Just if you have ever packed a badge for conferences like these, well, those are rookie numbers. And that sucks. That's a lot of work. So let's dive into the reasons why this came to be. Why did this become popular? Well, for this, there's a number of arguments. And one of the arguments is there's always... this is a flyer from the IFPI, which explains the difference between a legal disc and a pirated disc. And if you look, you can possibly read that. Probably, I don't think so, but it has all the check marks like you have to do this, and a pirated is well has a worse quality prints and ugly graphics. So let's unfairly compare products from the market and the pirated stuff. This is an official, authentic product that you could buy in a store. It's the best Dutch mega hits with Tim Immers, Gordon, and Fats Bauer. If you know who these people are, sucks to be you. it has been like cardboard cut out. It's pretty poorly made. Two color print on the disc, so that's not too impressive, right? It's pretty, and the design is made by, I don't know, somebody that should not be in design. An intern that's starting or something. I would not be proud producing something like this. I'm sorry. But here's the pirated stuff. So, full color discs, nice 3D graphics, which was all the rage back then. You see all familiar faces. Higher quality print. You see everywhere it's like these small texts, so it looks legit. There's even a barcode on them. So it has everything. For a consumer, it's indistinguishable from the real thing, except for a few points that it's cheaper and that you get it from a friend. So this is, if you compare these products, like the best and the worst, there's... basically, it's hard. So, of course, this is an unfair comparison because most of the pirated stuff is uglier, and most of the real, like commercially produced stuff is better in quality. It's more consistent in quality, to say the least. As a pirate, you have to do a lot of things. For example, all these CDs, where if you let a factory produced CDs, then there's all kinds of codes in there to prevent piracy. And as a pirate, you need to be aware that these codes exist, and you have to prevent that somebody can find out that where this CD is made, because next time the police will just watch and learn and then arrest you after some time. So one example from the Twilight investigation a decade ago was pirates tend to scratch out, if you are starting pirate or low budget or there's some reason, they tend to scratch out those numbers. Those numbers are here on the disc. Every disc has them. It's like in the center of the ring. There are some numbers there, which I think the more... years, the more numbers became there. It's like an impressive art collection now of numbers. But if you do this wrong and you don't recognize that CDs are sort of holograms and you just light it from another angle, you can still read codes like these. But that's a thing that you need to take care of as a pirate, and the bigger brands did. So they went to the factory and they had to buy stuff for the CD presses so these numbers would not be engraved or in the disc. And that costs like, I don't know, 10,000 gulden back then. And those things are not in the factory ever, because if you have them, yeah, the inspections can say like, you're producing pirated stuff because you have stuff to blank out those numbers. So these devices have never been in these production facilities. So the whole thing is production value of pirates is low until it's not. And then everything falls apart. The product, this looks not great, but the product itself has the best quality you could ever wish for, because it contains every awesome song that you wanted to hear, which is pretty nice, which is impossible for a label. I'll get back to that later. But another example is high quality products. This is the Master Box of 2009. It's a DVD box. The DVD box contains 7 DVDs with movies, including X-Men's Origins and such. It contains 2 DVDs with series like CSI, Lost, and Heroes, a concert registration, a DVD with MP3s, and a music disc. So all of that together for 30 euros every month. So anyone interested, I got a whole truck out in the back. So, but the volumes, like, I've just read up on this a little bit. I'm not too familiar with it. There was like 7,000 to 10,000 units that they made. So times 12 discs, that's a lot of stuff. Coming from Czechia, I read. So maybe we can turn the whole thing around. Suppose I'm a pirate and I have this factory, I have this process, I know how to make CDs and such. Why should I should try to legalize? Because then I can, yeah, make my money in an earnest way. And they did. They tried. These are 7 issues of Chartbusters. That was the first pirate on CD. That are actually legal. All the licenses have been paid, so that's pretty nice. But it didn't sell well. And why? Because to get licenses for publication, you need to negotiate with labels and artists and some. And it was told to me by people close to this source, saying that it was a problem. The biggest problem is not producing this. The problem is getting the artist to sign to be on a compilation disc, because it's less. It's a lesser source of revenue for the artist. And some artists didn't want to be on the disc with another artist, and some artists wanted to be on position number 5 instead of position number 2, and some artists this, and some artists that. And at the end of the ride, you are like 2 months in, and there's somebody else peaking in the charts on number 1, so you're missing the boat every time. So it doesn't work. It just didn't work. So in just a few editions, 2 different pirate crews created an illegal Chartbusters, and they fought for the market, and it was, as I've been told, a pretty intense struggle and a pretty intense competition, which is still remembered to this day by these groups. But as an honorable mention, Chartbusters was the first one on CD. And they even had like this mega mix in 1993 with like 60 songs on a CD mixed together by a DJ. And you see like whole some months with 2 discs or 4 discs. Like it's been a wild ride. You can see that just from what's known about this. And then from October 1994, a different product appeared, and it looked like this. It's the M3 Brown Eurocharts. It says, "Suck my dick. This is the real one." This came packaged with the sticker came packaged inside of the cellophane sleeve with the disc, because this battle between competing or rival organizations. Yeah, it was, I think, decided that month that this is the bigger brand. And so that happened to be. What they did, how this was made in San Jose in America and then flown to Germany and from there with imported with a truck to the Netherlands and here it was distributed. So if you so let's zoom in a little bit on the manufacturing process. This happens every month, so flown in, etc. And there's different ways you can do so. But of course, you get the inspection agencies on your ass. You get what's it called? Investigations. The Opsporingsdienst Buma Stemra was a private entity that was allowed to investigate. I'm not really clear. It's now part of the tax authority, but back then it was Buma Stemra, and they could do investigations and sometimes arrest people. So after a few months, you go up the chain, like, where do you get it from? Where do you get it from? And with these huge, ridiculous amount of numbers, maybe someone just talks or whatever happens, and people get arrested. So this is the Eurocharge of 96, April 96. And this is the month where the volume of this month has been busted. So truckloads destroyed, and the investigator is like, "Ha, look at us!" So the pirates are in jail, and they say, "Like you have pirated this. Yes, you, specifically you." And because you are in jail now, nothing will be produced next month. So, see how great we are. Come next month, this happened, and this, and this, and this, and this. So 5 different releases of the MV Brown delivered to the doorstep of the chief investigator. This is something that they did. They did this every month. This is, of course, for intimidation purposes, like you deliver it to somebody's home. It's also a cat and mouse game. It's also showing we still exist. We are still out here. Because the problem is in these, as I've been told, it's not like everybody knows who is who. But yeah, you can know who's who, but you need to prove it. And that's the hard part. So they knew who to arrest, but there was no proof because next month, here you go, 5 issues. And this happened more often. So this is the edition of October 95. And this was the last one that came from the US via Germany. And from there, they took it up to another fabrication process. And I can show you how that worked. So this, let's start with Mr. X. Mr. X is an entity. We know nothing about Mr. X. And Mr. X asked the producer, can you make a CD? So I have like this track list from the, I watched MTV last night and this is awesome, this is awesome. Can you put that on a disc? And the producer said, yeah, let's go. So the producer arranges boxes like these jewel cases from a plastics company in the Netherlands, which I will not name. Their artwork has to be made. So you go to a graphic agency or a marketing company and say, hey, can you make some awesome artwork for us? You have to make a pre-master. You have to all these songs. You have to put them on a disc. And then you have to go to France. And there they make a glass master. And this glass master can be used for 50,000 discs. So up to 6 of these masters were made. And those were taken to the presses. And all of this stuff happened through couriers. So different people. And these were all in touch with this producer. The couriers didn't know who was a courier. Everybody shut their mouth. And you were not allowed to talk about this because if you do, you're not too smart because you will undermine the whole operation. Another thing is, let's continue a little bit. So the couriers drive all this stuff to different garage boxes, for example, in Den Bosch or Alkmaar. and they SMS to the producer the code 0303 or whatever they thought of that month. This is a real example. And then the producer knows, okay, the stuff like the discs are in the lockup in Almere or in Den Bosch, and waits a few hours and then sends a message to the next courier, which takes it to the packing central. So there's no courier that ever sees each other. Nobody knows who's doing what in the organization, which is called a cell structure. This thing with these phones were given out every month. You get a new phone, awesome new phone. And expensive, but yeah, well, that's you needed to have new phones every month. You can only send one or two messages. Conversations were basically encoded. Numbers were distorted. Locations were distorted. So they knew, like in advance, that people are listening in. So try to circumvent it. So before you arrive at destination, 30 minutes before, take out the battery of your cell phone, and then you don't have reception. I don't think that works anymore today, but what do I know? So the courier takes it to a packing central, which is basically a normal house where a few families and friends are working around the clock. It's called like a sweepdrover. Not sweatshopping, the real sweatshopping. Don't complain, make more discs. And then when they're in boxes, they are put into a truck. And all the clients are like eagerly waiting because who has the product first can sell most. So they are always like, who pays more? Yeah, there's this interesting dynamic going on. So the courier takes it to the clients. And the clients in this case were MTV, Hit Explosion, Veronica, Sirius, Hits 538, Warner, and a series of other ones. But these were the bigger names. A lot of ad hoc productions. So a client is basically one of these brands. It owns this brand. So MTV was one client, and they had like 100,000 pieces of MTV, 100,000 of Hit Explosions and Veronica. So let's talk about costs. What does such an operation cost? I can tell you, because somebody explained that to me. And these are the prices that were paid for every step of the way. So boxes like the jewel cases are 15 cents, covers, prints are 15 cents each. A CD pressed is 1.5 gulden. And then you have to package all of them, and you get like 25 cents a disc, which is a whole lot if you make 100,000 discs. So you can make nice money. And a lot of booze from that if you want. And then the whole product cost about 215 to 250. And it was sold to the client for 850 to 10 gulden. So that's what it looked like. So those numbers are not too high. But something interesting is happening here. The price, the normal price for pressing a disc is 50 cents. The music industry squeezed those pressing companies so hard that they were basically, looking for cash to keep their company afloat. So if the pirate steps on your door with a suitcase with 500,000 gulden and says, like, can you help me? I'm giving you three times the rate that the normal music industry does, those presses are going to run over the weekend. And that basically happened with everything. Everything was paid well. Everybody in the chain was paid pretty well compared to the industry itself. So everybody was happy. Everybody kept their mouth shut. Very efficient. So let's go to the clients. Those clients, they had now a truck full. That, like, this truck was loaded, for example, in Alkmaar at the Van der Valk at the I-9. So the truck was just unloaded and then loaded to someone else while you were drinking coffee and maybe do a down payment for the next shipment or something. One of the other rules was never have money and ware at the same place. So yeah, that's just how you do business in that circuit, I guess. So the clients had a problem. They had a truck and they needed to get that stuff out of their hands as quickly as possible. An example I've been told is one of these. I don't know if it is somebody of these brands specifically, but an example is there was this organization which had a car shop in like a car repair shop. You can drive into the car repair shop and get your car repaired. And one day of the month, it was very busy at the car repair shop. So it was like this huge line with people wanting to get their latest disc. Very quick repairs, very efficient, yeah. Amazing. Invoices and everything. So so that was sent to this the car shop. And then it was distributed to smaller amounts. And then those, I don't know, small vans, they drove past the discotheques at night. It's like, and in the discotheque, it was a routine that like at 12 o'clock, there was this van in front. Like, hey, the van is in front again. You know what to do. We'll just play some music and see you right back. So discotheque goes to the van, buy all these MTV or whatever. And then the product is handed out. So in 2 days, they sold out the entire stock, basically. It was a product in very high demand. So the amounts are told, but also you can find those amounts in news sources and such based on confiscation. So it's 90,000. And the biggest release I heard was six of these Glass Masters. So yeah, that's if it's a double CD, it's like about 150,000 issues max. So let's talk about Sharp Eyes. I hear. Let's talk about turnover, which is an estimation done by me. The next slide. So you have this product which costs like wrong side. So if this product, like for 8.5 gulden, is sold to the client, and then you have like a profit margin of 6 gulden a piece. So if you do this with 300,000 units every month, you have like 1.8 million gulden estimated. But of course, you also have costs. There's like you have to buy these new cell phones. You have to buy all these suitcases to handle all the money. But also, for example, if the son of a pressing organization has a birthday, you buy them a car. It's like you buy the latest stuff, X and Y, whatever. So there's like operational expenses, and I estimate those roughly about 400,000 a month. Bribes, travel, whatever, phones. And if you deduct that from the turnover, the profits is about 1.4 million gulden. I hope to substantiate this claim somewhere soon. And if you split that between 14 people, which is also an estimate based on arrests, then you go for salaries between 20,000 and 120,000 gulden. I think it's black money. So you need to launder that money as well. This also comes with costs, but you know all about that, I guess. So. There's this. It's a serious amount of money, and I estimate that it's not enough, or maybe it is, to pay a lot of these royalties. So if they would be able to instantly get royalties, then maybe they could do this legally. But I have no numbers yet on what the costs were of these royalties. Some of the criminal enterprise pro tips that were handed was like the phones, maximum number of 2 or 3 calls, and then new phone. I think I've handled each and every one of them. So no one talks about it, etc. So here's your list. If you want to start a criminal enterprise, you can look at any TV series now, or this list. So these brands were strong. MTV and Hit Explosion and such. Everybody had them at home. These were household names. And there have been about more than 150 of these MTV releases, which is a lot. And more than 100 club tracks, which is an R&B selection. Pretty nice, though. Let's compare this to the real market. The answer, or one of the answers of the market, was let's do something similar and try to do something that's matching what the consumer wants. And they come up with Hitzone. Say first they had like Hits Made Famous by TMF, and then they came up with Hitzone in 1998, and Hitzone 100 was released in 2022. So they recently stopped because, well, who wants to have physical media nowadays, except for looking at nice pictures on vinyls or something. So Hitzone was a thing that happened every 3 months, and they had a year compilation, and the reason that it was once every 3 months is because of the licensing shit. It was a lot of work to get these artists to agree, and maybe they first wanted to wait out a month, etc. So basically they were always late with their stuff. The compilation was decent, but it was too late. Something funny. September 99, the biggest pirate organization between the MTV and such were busted. That month, the Hitzone 8 was the most successful Hitzone ever produced with double platinum status. So congratulations to them. But the clients didn't stick because 9 was not double platinum anymore. So in 99, this group was arrested. And I'll show you a little bit of what I know. But afterwards, a lot of these pirate groups continued in some way or some form, but not as nice or nicely produced as before. And things got a little bit uglier. And this is a piece of product management that came pressed on one of these releases. It's basically, if you don't read Dutch, it's a poorly written, poorly typed paragraph which says, put in some effort, put in the work. So it's a self-defeating statement in some way, which is funny. Yeah. So yeah, of course you want to have a great product, and the content is great, but the design was, well, not up to standard. Especially not compared to the years before that. At least I don't like it. So on September the 8th, 1999, this group behind the Serious Hits and Hit Explosion and a bunch of others was arrested. So what happened on that day? 400 police officers raided 52 homes and confiscated 2 million gulden. And all kinds of cars and riches that were might be begotten from illegal practices, so like illegal production of CDs. This is also from the Brein Info. There's a copy of it downstairs in the lobby, so if you want to read through it, it's pretty nice to see how it works. It has a simplified diagram of what the production looks like and the different years in a row. It's pretty nice, and I'm looking for some other editions of this Brein Info as well. I've contacted them. Can you please send them? But I'll try to just do that again and again and see if it turns up any day. Maybe they already destroyed it. So on the investigation side, like how do you catch an organization like this? Not much is known, and it will never be published how police will exactly do their job, because that's, you tell somebody else how to protect yourself against that. So that will always be secret. But somebody that was in these groups, so what happened is, like, from 97 to 99, there have been little to no busts. During this period, the police allowed to continue the operation. So they just, because they had this bust before, and then there were 5 different MTV Eurocharts next month. So just a single arrest was useless. They needed to know who were these people, what do they drink, what did they eat, who did they talk to, what are their everything. They knew at some point, they knew everything, and they had a period of 1.5 years where they could just, the pirates could just continue, and they were surveilled and everything. And one of these people said to me, like, when the court case came, they were arrested, they said, like, the picture I saw of myself eating sandwich in a restaurant in Van der Valk was like if there was a professional portrait photographer making a portrait photo of you sitting next to you. But yeah, there was nobody around. So he called like the pictures were of astonishing quality and there was no doubt in the world who was doing what. So it was the case, like the trial was extremely convincing and easy to just to happen. And then some of these people went to jail for about 3 years because not of because piracy, because being part of a criminal organization. That's a longer sentence, so you go for this. So here's a document which it can also be downloaded from the website of this project, and it states a little bit of this story. Like if you just do incidental arrests, then the stuff still continues. So we needed to do this in a bigger approach. So this is one of the stories that I've been sitting on this for a while, and I kind of forced my hand to collect so much stuff that I couldn't store at home anymore. And then I had to find a new place to show what it is. And it was at Awesome Space in Utrecht, but then it moved to Hilversum and they didn't have the space. So Home Computer Museum in Helmond is housing the collection now. It's like a real museum. So there needs to be a quality that I need to deliver now with some audio guidance and such, and maybe have a copy of this presentation. So you can walk through all of these different discs. You can see them, you can taste them, you can do everything, but you cannot listen to it because it's not allowed to listen to these music discs. So is this okay? Well, I asked Brian. I asked Brian, like, hey, can I do this? Is this okay? And they said, yeah, if you give a balanced, worked out story of how piracy came to be and what happens, then we're fine with it. So that's good. So nothing will be thrown in the trash by them. That's nice. So two weeks ago, I loaded up the truck with all the stuff. And then last Sunday, we like 7 hours putting discs in cases. There's even more. There's another one here and two of them over there. It's pretty sizable now. And the story with the interesting elements will be fleshed out so you can just walk around and learn a bit of how it worked and also more about how it impacted the artists. So how they were, what the negative impacts of this were. Because the story that I told was cat and mouse, Robin Hood, basically maybe some aggression, but it's okay. But there's also a bitter, more nastier stuff. And yeah, that's something that I've not told you in the story, but there have been other incidents as well. So piracy is interesting in that sense. So I told you you cannot listen to it, but if you have a smartphone, who here has a smartphone? So there's this very convenient website which houses all of these discs, and you can click on them, and then you see an artist, and then you can click on the play, and then you have a YouTube a video with ads of YouTube produced, and the video is coming from Vivo and all the other copyright holders, so they make money off it. So everybody wins. You can listen to it, you can listen to everything, artists get paid, so thanks YouTube for making this possible, together with Discogs, which provides an API for this information. So those two together make it possible for you to listen to it and the artist making money off it, so that's cool. And this is a nice. This also lists of what is in the collection and what not, and still missing like 500 of these music CDs, and I currently have about 1,200 or something of them. So it's ridiculous how much was made. On that topic, there's a large list of stuff that I'm still looking for, which is stuff intended for the Dutch market. So all these brand names, especially the software, if you have stuff of that, it's more than welcome. You can label it with your own name if you want, and put it up for display in the tape in the museum. If you have tapes, yeah, all the tapes are welcome, but we'd rather have something that is professionally printed instead of something home duped. So thanks to Discogs and YouTube for providing music in an accessible way. Thanks for Brian to allowing this story to be told and how giving some guidance on how to protect the creative. The pirates who told their stories and shook up the music industry with a product that is twice as good for half the price. It's a golden combination. And thank you for your attention and your visit to Home Computer Museum in Helmond. Finally, any questions? Yeah, I see.
I have a rather stupid question. It's in a museum now, so it has an insured value.
Yeah.
How do they insure a pirated thing?
Yeah, they said, yes, it has an insured value. It's part of the contract.
Yes.
And that's an interesting story. We're trying to figure out if this can be insured. It probably can because it has collection value in a sense. Yeah. And it has value for Dutch culture. Like like Twilight, for example, made it possible for people from villages to learn about 3D Studio Max and such. So there was a societal impact which was relevant. So I think it will be insured, and we just did an estimation on based on
a wet finger estimate.
Yeah, just yeah. An estimation. This it's like 3,000 units times like a euro, for example, for replacement value, and then later on this year we'll see what it is worth and what is special, what is not special, etc. So yes, we're trying to ensure this as well as it should. Like it's. We're trying to make this part of cultural heritage. So, yeah. Any other questions? Yeet?
So, how hard is it to get the UNESCO World Erfgoed label for this?
I sense a leading question. Well, part of this has been, not the UNESCO stuff, but the Twilight website with all the stuff and the images on it, that's part of the Royal Dutch Library. So that's archived by them forever and ever, which is awesome. That happened like 2 or 3 years ago. Somebody arranged this. And of course, yeah, we're trying to make sure that this becomes heritage and that becomes protected in some way. So
thank you.
Pretty hard, probably. Any other questions? There's a question over there. Many hackers were hurt.
There we go.
How did this happen?
What happened?
How did you start this collection? Why?
Oh.
What caused this collection?
Data hoarding.
Are you a professional licensed therapist?
No.
Okay. I had this collection a few, had this hit explosion, and I was like, I just set it off and let it. And then I had it again. For some reason, and then settled off. And then I had it again. I said, okay, now I'm going all in, just get everything, make sure it has a place, it fits because it has societal value. I think it's also partly autism, just sitting like sorting stuff. It's really relaxing and calming. So it's fun in that sense. And it's like, it's a nice story. It's like, what happened? That I think that deserves a place somewhere. And like the cowboy stories, and they told me like I drove with a car, and I first screwed out the in the door. I put all the money inside of the door, and then drove to the factory. Like those kinds of stories are pretty fun, and it's like a cowboy movie. And yeah, slowly parts of that cowboy movie are unraveled and documented, and I think that's very very fulfilling. But that's the answer. Anyone else? No questions? All right. Thank you very much.